You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Friday, the 18th of July. Today, with the Australian share market hit yet another record high today. The S&P ASX 200 up 1.4%, so a great day for the market. We'll find out more details with Marjabeen Zaman from ANZ, including a closer look at the Japanese and Chinese economies later in the podcast. But first, a new report by KPMG shows Australia's fertility rate rose ever so slightly in 2024 to 1.51, but that's still well below the 2.1 replacement rate that experts say is needed to sustain population growth, and it has implications for the economy. To find out more, Stephanie Youssef spoke with KPMG urban economist Terry Rawnsley.
It tells us in 2024, as we saw, a little bit of improvement in cost of living pressures, that people kind of had a few more children. So in 2023, we saw a real cost of living crunch, which led to what we called a baby recession, a big drop off the number of births. But 2024 saw a little bit of an improvement, but even that improvement was very spatially spread, so that the regions had quite an increase while the capital cities had a more modest growth. Then what it sort of comes down to is sort of a housing availability and affordability. So we sort of look at places like Sydney, for example, very expensive. People are sort of shifting out to places like Newcastle, Wollongong in search of relatively more affordable housing. So it's just people are able to stretch their budgets a bit more, get a bit of a bigger house, and it becomes a bit easier to sort of have that second or third child. I mean, it's quite challenging to maybe have a three children in a small two-bedroom apartment in a city, Sydney, but having three children in a three or four-bedroom house in the Hunter Valley, much easier proposition.
Do policies like paid parental leave and childcare subsidies affect national birth rates?
Yeah, we think anything that kind of helps people make affordability for having more children does help the situation. But it's probably in some places it's at the margin. So if you're saving someone $5,000 or $10,000 on childcare, but they have to pay an extra $150,000 for a home, the math doesn't stack up very quickly. So it's really these big ticket items around housing, which soaks up the biggest amount of people's budgets, which we think is really that handbrake on growth.
Are you seeing certain age groups that are more inclined to have less children?
What we've seen over the last sort of 30 years is the average age of the first birth from mothers getting older and older. So, you know, in the 70s, we're kind of in the mid-20s. Now it's sort of like 31-ish. So people are starting later, which then also means that it's harder to kind of get four or five kids when you start later. So that's sort of one of the factors which is sort of reducing that family size.
And what do lower birth rates mean for Australia's future?
The low birth rate kind of means that in the future we're going to have less workers. So it's going to be harder to find a tradie, an IT worker, an aged care worker. And in the past, when we've had this lower birth rate, we've just been able to sort of top up that workforce with international migration. But because the whole world's having less births, so international migrants are becoming fewer and fewer. So the competition is harder and harder. So unless we can sort of turn around our own birth rates, we're really at sort of the mercy of global competition. And we're seeing that already with places like Australia, Canada, and the UK all fighting over nurses. So they can sort of flip between the different systems. So there's lots of competition for this skill set. And this is going to continue. So if we don't boost the birth rate in the future, we're going to have less key workers, fewer taxpayers, which then flows through to the revenue for government, which then flows through to the services we can provide. So it really is a bit of a demographic time bomb we're dealing with.
So what are some of the things we can do as a country to boost the birth rate? How do we fix this?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. When we look historically, it's when we've had that periods of strong wage growth and tax cuts coming through. So those tax cuts really sort of give people a more disposable income. It kind of makes the household budget look a bit more robust. But for me, at the centre of it is really housing affordability. If we can work over the next sort of 5 to 10 years to sort of shave off, you know, relative affordability of $50,000 or $100,000 in the new dwelling markets, that will start to make people's decisions about having children a lot easier if they're saving $100,000 on a home purchase.
That's KPMG urban economist Terry Rawnsley speaking there.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
was a great day for the Australian share market, hitting a record high following good gains on Wall Street overnight. The S&P 500 there and the technology-based NASDAQ also hitting fresh records. The 200 up 1.37% to 8,757. All 11 sectors ended higher. Healthcare best up 2.71%, followed by materials led by BHP, information technology and financial stocks. For more on the day's market moves and a closer look at the Chinese and Japanese economies, I spoke with Mazabeen Zaman, ANZ's head of FX strategy. Mazabeen, the Australian share market, the ASX 200, at a record high again today. That's despite so much uncertainty, a lot of it prompted by US tariff policy. And we're still seeing signs of a softening economy here as the jobless rate ticks higher. How do you explain that move in the share market to keep hitting record highs? And what does it say about the way investors are feeling at the moment?
Look, I think it looks like risk sentiment is up. The spillover of positive earnings season in the US is feeding into the mood here as well. With the US tariffs, it does feel like the markets are discounting some sort of the tariff news and deadlines, with new possible extensions now. What I mean to say is markets may not be pricing in a situation where Trump doesn't tackle. Right. So that's something to think about. The second point is really in terms of our local data. Look, in terms of labor market numbers yesterday, yes, unemployment numbers went up. We see both signal and noise in the data, the very small increase in employment, the decline in hours worked, the increase in the unemployment rate. All of that has provided a good signal across the survey. That said, when you do a little bit of a deeper dive into it, the group rotating into the labor force sample has had a little bit of a higher propensity to be unemployed than the group it replaced, which helps explain a little bit of the jump in the unemployment rate. So we think about that as some statistical noise there.
Okay. What about the US, though, given Trump's threats to remove US Fed Chair Jerome Powell? I know Powell is also speaking next week. And then you've got US inflation, which edged up higher earlier this week, too. What's your take on the US economy? Because, again, overnight, the S&P 500, the tech-based NASDAQ, also hitting record highs.
All right, so I think we'll have to split that into two parts. The first is Powell. There's been a lot of concerns about Powell being replaced, however he's replaced. If that comes into play at all, whoever takes over his role will likely be more dovish, will likely be a little bit more aggressive with easing. That's the expectation now. And if that new person is a little bit more aggressive with easing, that leaves a little bit of a risk of inflation in the US picking up. And that means negative real yields, which means negative dollar. Not a great outlook there. But on the US economic side of things, the US data, you're right. I mean, the risk sentiment is up. US data is holding up for now. But when we look at the underlying data, again, when we go back to the labor market there, it does look like there is more firing, less hiring. US growth will eventually get impacted once the tariffs come in, because if I'm a US household, for me, I'm going to, the stuff that I buy, it's going to go up in prices. Even though it's a one-time move, it looks like it'll be a pretty large move. And the second point is, I have a weaker dollar, so imports that come in are going to be anyway more expensive for me. So it's going to be like a double hit to consumption or to products that investors want to buy or households want to buy, rather. So it doesn't paint a great picture ahead.
We've spoken about the Australia. We've spoken about the US, the other major economy now, China. GDP this week ticking above target. BHP shares today in Australia surging following record iron ore and copper production. It's a key Chinese customer. How's China taking the US tariffs in its stride and the way it's trying to tackle its own economy?
Look, I think so far the sentiment around China is pretty optimistic, and that's probably because it has avoided the worst case tariff scenario, which we saw at Liberation Day and after. The data kind of points to the view that domestic consumption is up. We've seen a pickup in domestic tourism and subsidized consumption. And then exports were also up. Now, you could argue the upside in Chinese exports might be on the back of front loading, which we have seen ahead of tariffs implemented everywhere else. But what we've also seen, interestingly, is that the direct imports to the US are down, but that's really been offset by more exports to EU and ASEAN. So I think that's going to continue. When it comes to iron ore prices rallying today, it's really that export growth in China and the accumulation of stockpiles of iron ore that China has been doing over time, which has kind of contributed to that as well. Now, looking ahead, I think, for the last many years, it's not really been concerns around the export story. It's been around the domestic demand story, and that has to be built up again. And we would expect more stimulus to be announced going forward.
We've also got a Japanese election coming up soon. How closely are you paying attention to that?
Look, I think there are obviously going to be two outcomes. One is the LDPK maintains a majority. And again, if that comes into effect this weekend, the positives there are that trade negotiations with the US will continue to be on track. Second will be that the Bank of Japan will continue to look to raise rates later this year because, on the fiscal side, when you have a majority, it's easier to get things across the line rather than when you have a minority government. Now, obviously, if they lose the majority, that's going to disrupt trade negotiation. That's going to possibly see a delay in Bank of Japan normalization and also increase policy and political uncertainty in Japan. And that's really reflected in the FX market.
And speaking of FX markets, how is all of this impacting currency markets generally?
Look, I think what we have seen over the last week or so, we have seen a stronger dollar. Now, we have to remember that for the US dollar, why it's stronger over this period, we are in summer months in the Northern Hemisphere. There tends to be less liquidity, so sometimes data drives exaggerated moves. At the end of the day, as you spoke about it, the US earnings season is in play as well. And that's now coming out to be pretty positive. And the US has been trading like a risk currency almost. In this regime, and it's been moving high on the back of that. And obviously, we had inflation data this week, which showed, which was a little bit firm, and that kind of points to the view that there are less Fed cuts pricing in. So all in all, in the near term, we are seeing the dollar move up, but we think this is a short-term blip. Longer term, we have a negative bias on the US dollar.
That is Marsha Beenz-Aman there from ANZ, the head of FX strategy. That wraps up the podcast for the week. A bit of a note, I'll be taking a break for about a week. Stephanie Youssef will have the market news over the next week as we get ready for corporate reporting season in August. Don't forget, though, to click subscribe if you do enjoy this podcast and to give it a rating or a review, especially on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'm Ricardo Gonsalves. I will be back in a week or so.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.